Alfred loved it.
His head was not ready to explode.
I'd like to bring the House Committee on General Government Consumer Protection to order.
I was looking down your way.
Order. And it is Wednesday, April 20th. Committee, we do have some bills to work on today. As you can see from our agenda, there will be some bills that we will not be working on.
And I decided we would do that together.
So with that, I'm going to open a work session. Maybe I should make an announcement ahead of time. We are not going to be hearing or working House Bill 2957. And
I stuck with her.
That's my understanding.
2003.
Is that the it's still established that it establishes one?
We're not going to be working House Bill 2003. House Bill 3574, House Bill 2780.
That's right, I expected it.
What was the one before
2570? And that concludes my announcements for the moment. So with that, I will open a work session on House Bill 2859. Jan, would you give us a brief description on House Bill 2859, please?
Mr. Chair and committee members, this is the measure that creates the Task Force on State Historical Resources, and the amendment that was already adopted replaced the original measure, so instead of a task force, it instead adds 9 advisory members to the Oregon Heritage Commission. There is no revenue impact. There is a minimal fiscal impact with no statement being issued, and the bill is being referred to Ways and Means.
Mr. Chair.
It's Sam Wisnett.
I move House Bill 2859 of the floor, but do pass as amended recommendation and the bill be referred to Ways and Means by prior reference.
Representative Wisnett moves House Bill 2859 as amended to the floor with a do pass recommendation and the bill be referred to Ways and Means by prior reference. Discussion? Representative Cameron?
Let's go.
No discussion. I know we have members from the commission and state parks here, but it seems you're not needed. So with that, can we have a roll call vote, please?
Representative Cameron?
Aye.
Representative Crum?
Aye.
Representative Hogger?
Aye.
Representative Matthews?
Aye.
Vice Chair Sheehan?
Yes.
Vice Chair Smith?
Yep.
Co-Chair Whitson?
Aye.
Co-Chair Holby?
Aye. House Bill 2859, having received required votes, is passed to the floor, and we will have Representative Nathanson carry that bill. Then I'll close.
It's going to Ways and Means.
Oh, excuse me. We won't have a carrier. It's not going to the floor. It goes to Ways and Means, where she'll look at it there. And with that, I'll close work session on House Bill 2859. And I will open a work session on House Bill 3000. Jan, will you give us a brief description on House Bill 3000?
Mr. Chair and committee members, this is the bill that requires a contracting agency to apply for specified preferences to the following proposals. When the proposer is headquartered in or owned by a resident of the county or adjacent county in which the work will be performed, or when the proposer is headquartered in or owned by a resident of the state. Skipping ahead to the Dash 3 amendment that was already adopted, it replaces the original measure and allows a contracting agency to pay up to 10% more for goods that are fabricated or processed in Oregon or services that are performed in Oregon. And the amendment was adopted earlier this week. There is no revenue impact. A fiscal statement has been issued, and there is no subsequent referral on the measure.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 3000 to the floor, but do pass as amended recommendation.
Representative Wisnett moves House Bill 3000 as amended to the floor with a do pass recommendation. Discussion?
I'm a hard no. I'm going to bring 3 Republicans with me. I love the bill. It's a great bill.
Any other serious discussion, consideration? Seeing none. Tamara, could we have a vote, please?
Representative Cameron?
No.
Representative Clem?
Aye.
Representative Conger?
Aye.
Representative Matthews?
Aye.
Vice Chair Sheehan?
Yes.
Vice Chair Smith?
Aye.
Vice Chair Wizenhut?
Aye.
Vice Chair Hobie?
Aye.
Mr. Chair? Mr. Chair, I'd change my note to aye, please.
For the record, do note, Representative Cameron voted aye.
We should have all done that. We totally should have all done that. I feel so bad about us right now.
I'm in a committee hearing at the moment.
Sorry about that. Very serious business.
With that, cool. House Bill 3000 having received the required votes, it's passed to the floor. And do we have a volunteer to carry that bill?
I'll carry it.
Goodbye. Representative Clem, you can carry the bill.
Oh, thank you.
With that, I'll close the work session. House Bill 3000. I'll open a work session on House Bill 3038.
Mr. Chair and committee members, this is a bill that prohibits the assessment of a system development charges or standby charges for a water meter of higher capacity installed for the fire sprinklers in one or two family houses. There's no amendment. There's a minimal revenue impact. A fiscal statement has been issued, and the committee has received approval from the co-speakers to move this bill to the Rules Committee.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Wisnett.
I move House Bill 3038 to the floor without recommendation as to passage, and the bill referred to House Committee on Rules.
Representative Wisnett moves House Bill 3038 without recommendation as to passage, and the bill be referred to the House Committee on Rules. Discussion? Seeing none, Tamara, a vote, please.
Representative Cameron.
Aye.
Representative Clem.
Aye.
Representative Conger.
Aye.
Representative Matthews.
Aye.
Vice Chair Sheehan.
Yes.
Vice Chair Smith.
Aye.
Co-Chair Wizenhut.
Aye.
Co-Chair Hobie.
Aye. House Bill 3038 received the required votes, is moved to the Committee on Rules, and I'll close the work session on House Bill 3038. Open a work session on House Bill 3317.
Mr. Chair and committee members, this is the bill that modifies provisions regulating communities governed by declarations. The committee earlier adopted the Dash 2 amendment. There is no revenue impact, there's no fiscal impact, and there's no subsequent referral.
Mr. Chair.
Sam Wisnett.
I move House Bill 3317 to the floor, but do pass as amended recommendation.
Representative Wisnett moves House Bill 3317 as amended to the floor with a do pass recommendation. Discussion. Representative Sheehan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm going to be against this for the same reason that we discussed in the public hearing. The fact that they're specifically allowing them to disallow videotaped meetings or disallowing people to have some sort of record of their meetings. I don't like that. I think it's going to create more problems than it was intended to solve, and so I'm going to be a no.
Thank you. Any other discussion? Seeing none, Tamara, may we have a vote, please?
Representative Cameron.
Aye.
Representative Clem.
Aye.
Representative Conger.
Aye.
Representative Matthews.
Aye.
Vice Chair Sheehan?
No.
Vice Chair Smith?
Aye.
Co-Chair Wizenhut?
Aye.
Co-Chair Hobie?
Aye. House Bill 3317, having received the required votes, is passed to the floor. Volunteer to carry this bill. Anybody want to jump out there? Representative Conger, thank you very much.
I'll play the YouTube video on the floor.
With that, we'll close the work session on House Bill 3317. Open a work session on House Bill 3415.
Mr. Chair and committee members, this is a bill that requires a contracting agency that conducts a procurement for public improvement to pay a fee equal to 0.1% of the contract price to the Office of the Secretary of State. The Dash 3 amendment is before you now. It has not been adopted. It deletes requirement that the fee be paid to the Secretary of State if the contracting agency uses funds that are subject to provisions that restrict the use of the funds for such purpose. And it allows the Secretary of State to require a contracting agency to pay for the cost of auditing a specific public contract if the 0.1% fee was not paid. And the audits would not be selected on a random basis either. And allows the Legislative Assembly to review or convene a work group to review the audit reports. There's no revenue impact. There's a fiscal statement issued, and the bill is being referred to Ways and Means Committee.
Mr. Chair, I move -3 amendments dated March 31st, 2011 to House Bill 3415.
Representative Wisnant moves the -3 amendments dated March 31st, 2011 to House Bill 3415. Discussion? Representative Sheehan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I really, really, really don't like this one. The reason is you have the small percentage going to the Secretary of State for audits. That's an expense. I get that. The Secretary of State's going to have to spend some money to do it. They need to collect some money. There's a whole other side to this, and that's the actual contracting agency that's having to expend their man hours on complying with the audits and participating in this. The system right now, I think, works just fine. Adding more audits to it, I don't think, is helpful, and it's going to add more money to the overall cost of every project and a burden to the businesses that are doing business with the state. I'm strongly against this, and I really hope that some other folks will join me in being strongly against it, too.
Thank you. Other discussion?
This is in regards to the amendments, correct, Mr. Chair?
It is.
Not the bill itself.
Oh, I'm sorry. My comments were directed at the bill.
Yeah.
I take it, is there any objection to the amendment? Seeing none, the -3 amendments are adopted. House Bill 3415.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 3415 on the floor, but do pass as amended recommendation, and the bill be referred to Ways and Means by prior reference.
Representative Wisnant moves House Bill 3415 as amended to the floor with a do pass recommendation. The bill be referred to Ways and Means by prior reference. Discussion?
Mr. Chair, I'm strongly against it.
Yes.
Question. Thank you. Representative Smith.
Does it limit the kind of contractor? Is it limited to, does it limit the, it says contracting agency. What's the limit of, what's the ambit of agency? Do we know?
We could stand at ease and call legislative counsel if you'd like a legal opinion on that.
A general one is fine. I mean,
a contracting agency is any, essentially, if I venture out there too far, I'm sure somebody will correct me, but a contracting agency is a public body that contracts for public improvement contracts. Could be cities, could be school districts, could be the state, could be any public body.
Yeah, so it's not my impression, and I want to make sure I'm not wrong, it wasn't limited to private contractors, but sort of it it would also be public agencies.
As discussed, the audit is of public contracts.
Got it.
The contract. It's not auditing private contractors as such.
I don't think that changes his objection, but I want to make sure I understand.
No. Any other discussion? I will recognize Representative Sheehan's concerns. I do recognize those concerns, and though I disagree with him on a point or two, I do recognize those concerns. I think that we had testimony in this committee from every association and industry and trade group that supported this piece of legislation because of the problems that they're having with the public contracting process. And specifically, we had a lot of discussion around alternative bidding contracts and construction manager, general contractor issues, and the ability of people to fairly bid on public contracts. This bill, though, does implement a small fee, a 0.1% on public contracts from public agencies. I think it's rather minimal to provide the Secretary of State the ability to look at public contracts to give us feedback. If you look in the bill, it's going to give legislature feedback. To review public contracts, to establish a work group in the future of stakeholders that have requested that we look at public contracts and try to take a second look at how the processes are going and to make recommendations to this legislature. And I think that is a good process, and I look forward to that process as opposed to passing bills that turn public contracting upside down immediately. I think this subject matter needs a lot of careful consideration, and that's the intent of this bill. And we need that feedback, hopefully, that we'll get from those audits. And I think it will also put at least a message out there to contracting agencies that, you know, we expect that the public contracting laws be followed. And so that, I hope, will have an impact as well. So I am fully supportive of this bill, and do note that we had a lot of support from the business community. Representative Conger.
Just a question. These audits are already occurring. This would just increase the frequency of the audits, correct?
I don't know that I can answer that question. The audits from the Secretary of State's office, I don't believe, are already occurring. However, I know that they have done a couple, but not generally in their practice. There is somebody from the Secretary of State's office here who might be better able to answer that question.
I would love to have the answer to that question quickly.
Evening committee. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, Barry Pack, Deputy Secretary of State. We do have the authority to audit contracts of any public body, and we occasionally do. We don't do them regularly. We do all of our audits based on a risk assessment, and so I want to thank the Chair for the amendment, which does take out the random selection of these audits so that we will be able to take these additional resources that will be coming to us and select the contracts that we would audit under this bill based on risk as we normally do. In our normal course of auditing. Does that answer your question, Representative Conger?
I think it does. So, in a shorter fashion, you are doing these audits. The Secretary of State's office is doing audits of public contracts now, and you're doing it based on a risk assessment, which I interpret to mean that you're looking at the higher value, possibly more likely to be messed up, maybe more complicated contracts, and you're trying to audit those. This doesn't change that. It just provides funding, which I'm guessing will be used for additional audits.
Mr. Chair, Representative Conger, yes. We do occasionally audit public contracts like this now in the course of our regular audit work, balanced against other audit work that we need to do. This provides a funding stream for a dedicated pool of resources to audit public contracts.
Other questions? Mr. Pack, what kind of audits has the Secretary of State done the last 5 years on public contracts, and how many?
Mr. Chair, there is one of which immediately leaps to my mind without further research or background, and that is on the University of Oregon Arena construction project.
So that's the only one you can think of in the last 5 years?
Having been here for 2 years, that's the one that leaps to my mind. I would be happy to get back to the committee with that data if you would like, but that's what I know we have done the last 2 years.
And may I ask, what prompted you to do that audit?
Mr. Chair, there were a number of concerns brought to our office over the nature of the contracts that were awarded as the project moved from public to private and back to public management.
And I have to ask you one more question. Who brought those concerns to you? Was it a state agency or a state official that requested that audit be conducted?
Mr. Chair, I can recollect one meeting we had with contractors. As for the rest of how that audit, the genesis of that audit, I'm a little foggy in my memory, I'm afraid.
Okay, thank you. Representative Cameron.
Mr. Chair, since we appear to be in a public hearing, let me ask a couple questions here. On that particular audit, if this bill passes, who would pay the fee, and how much would the fee be to the Secretary of State?
Mr. Chair, Representative Cameron, I believe that the university system is not included in this bill, and so that particular audit would not have been covered by this bill if enacted.
Thank you.
Other questions?
Any amendments?
We have just adopted the national.
No, I moved the motion. Didn't I move the motion?
It was adopted.
So I moved the motion.
No other discussion. We have a motion on the table. We have a vote, Tamara.
Representative Campbell?
No.
Representative Plum.
Aye.
Representative Conger.
No.
Representative Matthews.
Aye.
Vice Chair Sheehan.
No.
Vice Chair Smith.
Aye.
Co-Chair Wisdom.
Aye.
Co-Chair Holby.
Aye. House Bill 3415, having received required votes, is moved to the Committee on Ways and Means. I'll close the work session on House Bill 3415.
We're going to walk out. Keep rolling this.
Yeah.
Isn't it that liberal?
No one likes the UFO.
We'll stand at ease for a few moments. So now that Kevin Cameron's out,
I have all kinds of stuff.
I'm going to reconvene the House Committee on General Government and Consumer Protection Committee. We are now going to open a work session on House Bill 2466.
Mr. Chair and committee members, this is a bill that prohibits sending an unsolicited fax to a public body. The committee adopted earlier this week the Dash 1 amendment that expanded it to include prohibiting sending faxes to any person, not just a public body. And there is no revenue impact. There is a minimal fiscal impact on statement issued. And the committee does have approval to send this to the House Rules Committee.
Without, I believe.
And Mr. Chair.
Representative Wisnant.
I move House Bill 2466 to the floor as amended. Without recommendation, the bill be referred to House Committee on Rules.
Representative Wisnant moves House Bill 2466 as amended without recommendation and the and that the bill be referred to the House Committee on Rules. Discussion. Representative Wisnant.
Committee members, I think we all like this bill and wanted to work it. The problem, this is the one Representative Cameron wanted to put his amendment in, but the Department of Justice thinks there's some real issues in this and talked to the carrier of the bill, and because of that, we'll move it to rules and see if they can work it out. Otherwise, it might let's probably die in rules. So.
Thank you, Representative Wisnant, and that is exactly accurate. We don't think that we can pass this bill out from this committee and have it survive. We think it needs a little bit more work, and we think it's possible that we can actually get this bill out of rules
really?
And make it a good bill, but we have to address some constitutional issues in the bill.
With your amendment.
Hopefully. So we'll see what the Rules Committee can do on that. So I appreciate the work the committee did on this to try to make this a good bill, but I think we just fell a little bit short of some constitutional issues, so that's the reason for moving this out. And I didn't really want to move it with a due pass because that means we agree totally with the policy, and since it has constitutional issues, I was not comfortable saying due pass that. So just wanted to explain that for the committee's sake. So we have a motion on the table, and any other discussion? Seeing none, Tamara, could we have a vote, please?
Representative Cameron.
Aye.
Representative Hunt.
Aye.
Representative Conger.
Aye.
Representative Matthews.
Aye.
Vice Chair Sheehan.
Yes.
Vice Chair Smith.
Yes.
Vice Chair Wizard.
Aye.
Vice Chair Holby.
Aye. House Bill 2466, having received the required votes, moved to the Committee on Rules.
Chair.
I'll close the work session. House Bill 2466.
If we could tell the Committee on Rules that if they end up passing it, unless paper gets created, could they find some other tree to cut to create some more paper before they bring this bill to the floor?
Your name's Shoffler, yeah.
No, I'm for wood first.
Can you get that to me in writing, please? So with that, I will open up a...
That's somebody's job.
Work session on House Bill 3111. Jan.
Mr. Chair and committee members, this bill establishes a process for veterinary facilities to remove a domestic animal if the owner doesn't take repossession of it. The amendment, the dashboard amendment, was adopted earlier this week.
Oh,
there's no revenue impact. There's no fiscal impact.
This freaking bill. I feel like I've been killing dogs every committee hearing we've had.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 3111 to the floor of a due pass as amended recommendation.
Representative Wisniewski has moved House Bill 3111 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion.
Get up.
I think you already had yours. Representative Clem.
I just appreciate the work of the various and sundry folks to try and not have the amendments help get the nice little puppies into a no-kill area before other activities may or may not occur to them.
I'm not sure we really identified what a nice puppy was in the bill.
I think his desire is to allow them to hunt cougars when they're older.
So, okay. I'm trying to
cool
keep...
now?
I know, Mr. Chair. Yeah. It's late.
All right.
Okay.
I too, on
so
the record,
we have,
to be, never mind.
We have a motion on the... We have a motion before us. Tamara, can we have a vote, please?
Aye.
Representative Penn.
Yes.
Representative Conger.
Aye.
Representative Matthews.
Aye.
Vice Chair Sheehan.
Yes.
Vice Chair Smith.
Yes.
Oh, got it.
Co-Chair Wisniewski.
Aye.
Postcard. Co-Chair Holby.
Aye. House Bill 3111, having received the required votes, is, it goes to the floor. And so do we have a volunteer for a carrier? Seeing none, Representative Barker will carry this bill.
Barker, get it?
Close the work session on House Bill 3111. With that, I'll open a work session on House Bill 3180.
Great job. Mr. Chair and committee members, this reestablishes the Oregon Board of Accountancy as a semi-independent state agency. The committee adopted the Dash 1 amendment, and there's no revenue impact, there's no fiscal impact, and the bill has a subsequent referral to Ways and Means.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 3180 to the floor of a due pass as amended recommendation. The bill be referred to Ways and Means by prior reference.
Representative Wisniewski has moved House Bill 3180 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. The bill be referred to Ways and Means by prior reference. Discussion about this? Seeing none, can we have a vote, please, Tamara?
Representative Cameron?
Yes.
Representative Clem?
Yes.
Representative Conger?
Aye.
Representative Matthews?
Yes.
Vice Chair Sheehan?
Yes.
Vice Chair Smith?
Yes.
Chair Wizard?
Aye.
Chair Holdridge?
Aye. House Bill 3180, having received the required votes, moved to the Committee on Ways and Means. I'll close a work session. House Bill 3180. I'd like to open a work session. House Bill 3195.
Mr. Chair, committee members, bill provides that if a government agency lawfully conducts a transaction by electronic means, then it's presumed that the person... the amendment, the Dash-4 amendment, changed the bill that allows county clerks to record an instrument that's presented as an electronic image or an electronic by electronic means. There is no revenue impact, and there is no fiscal impact, and there's no subsequent referral.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 3195 to the floor, but do pass as amended recommendation.
Representative Wisnett moves House Bill 3195 as amended to the floor with a do pass recommendation. Discussion? Seeing none, Tamara, can we have a vote, please?
Representative Cameron?
Aye.
Representative Clem?
Begrudgingly, aye.
Representative Conger?
Enthusiastically, aye.
Representative Matthews?
Aye.
Vice Chair Sheehan?
Yes.
Confusedly, aye.
Vice Chair Wizard?
Aye.
Vice Chair Holby?
Aye. House Bill 3195, having received the required votes, is passed to the floor with a due pass recommendation. I'll have a volunteer to carry this complicated bill.
Escobar, maybe?
Oh, this was Representative Escobar's.
You think he wants to carry it?
Yeah.
Representative Esquivel.
That's why I had to vote for his anti-paper bill. Esquivel
will carry the bill. Close the work session on House Bill 3195. I'd like to open a work session on House Bill 3411.
Mr. Chair and committee members, bill is the bill that prohibits a portable electronic vendor from selling, issuing, or offering insurance coverage without a limited license from DCBS. Committee already has adopted the Dash-3 amendment. There's no revenue impact, and there is a minimal fiscal impact with no statement issued, and there's no subsequent referral on the bill.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 3411 to the floor, but do pass as amended recommendation.
3411. Correct. Representative Wisnett moves House Bill 3411 to the floor with a do pass recommendation. Discussion? Seeing no discussion, Tamara, can we have a vote, please?
Representative Cameron.
Aye.
Representative Clem.
Aye.
Representative Conger.
Aye.
Representative Matthews.
Aye.
Vice Chair Sheehan.
Yes.
Vice Chair Smith.
Yes.
Vice Chair Wisnett.
Aye.
Vice Chair Holby.
Aye. House Bill 3411, having received the required votes, passed the floor with due pass recommendation.
Sean Miller, carry the bill.
Donna Nelson. Donna Nelson, yes!
Let's get her back.
I can carry the bill for you, Mr. Chair, if you're looking for somebody to do some heavy lifting. I'm your guy.
I was really saving you for something else. Representative Matthews has volunteered to carry the bill. We'll close the work session, House Bill 3411.
Can I say one thing, Mr. Chair? It won't be a joke. It won't even try to be one. Never mind. Let's move on. It was going to try to be one.
I'd like to open a work session on House Bill 3461.
Mr. Chair and committee members, this is the bill that deals with the surcharge for the Klamath Dam removal. The Dash-6 amendment was already adopted. The Dash-7 amendment also adopted. There's no revenue impact. There's no fiscal impact and no subsequent referral.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 3461 to the floor of a due pass as amended recommendation.
Representative Wisnett moves House Bill 3461 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Representative Smith.
Actually, serious question. The Klamath Dam stuff has been really controversial, really heated, really challenging. Are we confident at this point that this truly is sort of a consensus bill and people are pretty cool with that? That's my most recent recollection and my notes. But before we blithely move it quickly,
Mr.
I want to get clarity.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Wisnett.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Smith. This product was a result of PUC negotiations, CUB negotiations, Pacific Corps negotiations, Northwest Industries negotiations. Who did I miss?
Me.
And Representative Hovey and Representative Wisnett. And it is it's a good bill, good consumer bill, and good for industry. So
great, thanks.
And I can't argue with that. Any other discussion? Seeing none, Tamara, can we have a vote, please?
Representative
Cameron. Aye.
Representative Clem.
Aye.
Representative Conger.
Aye.
Representative Massey.
Aye.
Vice Chair Sheehan.
Yes.
Vice Chair Smith.
Aye.
Vice Chair Wizard.
Aye.
Chair
Aye. House Bill 3461, having received required votes, passed the floor with due pass recommendation. Representative Wisnett, would you like to carry that bill?
Thank you.
Close the work session on House Bill 3461.
I left the treasurer's office out of my...
I'd like to open a work session on House Bill 3575.
Mr. Chair, committee members, the bill directs Department of Administrative Services and the Governor to submit continuous improvement level state budget based on performance measure management and performance measurement techniques. There's no amendments. There's no revenue impact. There's a fiscal statement issued, and the bill has a subsequent referral to Ways and Means.
Representative Wisnett.
Yes. Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 3575 to the floor without recommendation. The bill be referred to Ways and Means by prior reference.
Representative Wisnett moves House Bill 3575 without recommendation to the floor and that the bill be referred to Ways and Means by prior reference. Discussion? Representative Smith.
Yeah, if anybody had, so it was the Ways and Means co-chair's request that both the Senate vehicle and the House vehicle on similar topics get down to Ways and Means and have a work group on which both Senator Morse and I and others will participate. If anybody wants, and this is a real offer, if anybody has particular input or wants reports on what we're talking about, because there's a few vehicles like the Progress Board stuff we dealt with the other committee, like this, and DAS is working through it in a work group. If anybody wants to be engaged or get updates, happy to do that.
And
any other discussion on this? Seeing none, Tamara, can we have a vote, please?
Representative Cameron.
Aye.
Representative Clem.
Aye.
Representative Conger.
Aye.
Representative Matthews.
Aye.
Vice Chair Sheehan.
Yes.
Vice Chair Smith.
Yes. I'm okay.
Vice Chair Wisdom.
Aye.
Chair Hobie.
Aye. House Bill 3575, having received required votes, is moved to the Committee on Ways and Means without recommendation. And I'll close the work session. House Bill 3575. Counties are still here, sure.
We just open the session, close it. Well, I thought we wanted to put on record.
Open a work session on HJR 6.
Jim? This measure proposes a constitutional amendment to allow the legislature to provide for consolidation of metropolitan service districts with county. However, the Dash 1 amendment replaced the original measure, and it was adopted. It proposes a constitutional amendment to allow the legislature to provide for consolidation of two or more counties and the replacement of existing county charters with new charter. There's no revenue impact. No fiscal statement has been issued, and the bill has a subsequent referral to the Revenue Committee.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Wisnett.
Committee members, we heard this bill on Tuesday, and it's really, the first time we heard the bill. Representative Greenlick had originally proposed that member consolidating Nome counties, and then he came up with another idea, and the bill was gut stuff where he put in there that counties could merge if they wanted to. And that was his testimony he received. I had a meeting today with the drafter from LC and a representative from Association of Counties. And the way the bill was drafted, it does not exactly say what we thought it was saying. If you look at the bill on line 9, the amended that we approved, it says if the consolidation is approved by a majority of the electors voting at any legally called election within the counties proposed for consolidation, even if a majority of the electors in any one of the counties proposed for consolidation votes in opposition to the consolidation. It's going to happen. I should have gone further that there would be a consolidation. So in other words, the larger county could vote for consolidation, the smaller one votes against it, but it happens, or vice versa. And I don't think that's what we really want. The counties don't want that at this point. Also, my meeting with LC was to talk about, to try to make this a useful bill in case we get into a county insolvent. Is that not...
insolvency. Yeah.
Bankruptcy. Insolvency. Not the county cannot go bankruptcy. Right. Represent, so, but it's use of words, but what... So, we haven't had a chance to talk to Representative Greenlee, but I think that this bill needs a lot of work, and we may expand the concept, and I will agree to work with the good representative during the interim, and we can see if we can bring it back in the February session, which I've been told will occur in February. So so I would recommend, Mr. Chair, that we not move the bill.
We don't have a motion on the table, so Representative...
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. I support my co-chair. I'm equally angry at any member of the Health Committee today, and I would be happy to deliver the news to Representative Greenlee about his questionable, at best, bill.
Thank you. I don't think that'll be necessary, though, on behalf of this committee. I hope you don't do that, although I can sympathize.
All of them.
Other comments? Don't have a motion on the table. HJR 6 fails for lack of a motion. Close the work session on HJR 6.
Fantastic.
I will open a... Do we have a Sean here?
No, are you ready to 2631?
Mm-hmm. I think he needs to be here. I'm going to skip over it.
I'm going to go call him now.
We're going to open a work session on the House Bill 2945. Representative Wisnett, you want to give us a motion on that?
I'm not sure. No, I don't.
Okay, we'll stand at ease for just a second. Being the House Committee on General Government, Consumer Protection.
Mr. Chair.
We are, let me reopen, I'm going to reopen the work session on House Bill 2945 for clarity.
Be sure I say that. Hey, Mr. Chair, mm-hmm. I move House Bill 2945 without recommendation to the floor with a subsequent referral to
House Committee on Rules.
House Committee on Rules.
Representative Wisnett moves House Bill 2945 to the floor without recommendation, and the bill be referred to the Committee on Rules by prior reference.
Not prior reference, but...
Or by the reference we got from the Speaker's office. Has that approval from the Speaker's office. Some sort of reference, anyway.
Brian.
Is there discussion on this bill?
Mm-hmm.
Rep. Representative Clem.
Just for the record, I've been foiled again by the city of Salem, but they were right. The amendment was not written to cover Mr. Kreitzberg's situation exactly correctly and would have affected Lincoln City and some other places. So once again, after being dueled to a... I've been bested by the city of Salem again. I am supporting having it go down there, and I will either let it die or try and work on something that I can get some agreement from them on. The Kreitzberg, remember the guy that got his building permit? He couldn't get his building permit. Yeah. Anyway, the amendment doesn't quite address it correctly.
Yeah. And I know there, I appreciate that. I know there's some other bills in this building working on annexation on some of these issues as well. But we'll move it to rules at this point if the committee chooses to move it there. So we have a motion. Other discussion? Seeing none, Tamara, could we have a vote, please?
Representative Cameron.
Aye.
Representative Clem.
Aye.
Representative Conger.
Aye.
Representative Matthews.
Aye.
Vice Chair Sheehan.
Yes.
Vice Chair Smith.
Aye.
Chair Wisnett.
Aye.
Chair Holden.
Aye. House Bill 2945 has received the required votes. Is moved to the Committee on Rules. Now I'll close the work session on House Bill 2945. And we're just moving right along here. Let's go ahead and open a public hearing on... Well, excuse me. Let's open a... work session on House Bill 2958.
Mr. Chair, committee members, this bill requires DCBS to compile and submit a report annually to the legislature regarding the funds dispersed or distributed in Oregon under the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act of 2009. There's a -1 amendment that was proposed but not adopted by the committee. There's no revenue impact and no fiscal impact. Excuse me, a fiscal statement was issued. And the bill has a subsequent referral to Ways and Means. The committee also has received approval from the co-speakers to move the bill to the House Rules Committee.
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Representative Wisnett.
I move House Bill 2958 to the floor without recommendation as a passage, and the bill be referred to the House Committee on Rules. Wait, is it Rules or Ways and Means?
Rules.
Rules.
Representative Wisnett moves House Bill 2958 without recommendation to the floor as to, and that the bill be referred to the House Committee on Rules. Discussion. Seeing none. Mr. Stembridge, can we have a vote? I mean, Tamara, can we have a vote?
Representative Cameron.
Aye.
Representative Brown.
Yes.
Representative Conger.
Aye.
Representative Matthews.
Aye.
Vice Chair Sheehan.
Yes.
Vice Chair Smith.
Yes.
Co-Chair Wisnett.
Aye.
Co-Chair Holby.
Aye. House Bill 2958, having received the required votes, is moved to the Committee on Rules without recommendation. Close the work session on House Bill 2958. I'd like to open a public hearing on House Bill 3387.
Mr. Chair and committee members, this bill designates the Trust for Cultural Development account as a trust account exclusively for arts and culture purposes. It declares legislative intent to create contractual obligation to use those monies only for arts and culture purposes and to prevent the transfer of monies from accounts for other uses. The proposed -1 amendment exempts from prohibition on transfer from trust monies contributed by taxpayers that qualified for the tax credit. And other monies appropriated from the general fund.
Thank you. With that, we'll have Representative Boone. Could you identify yourself for the
record,
please?
Good evening, co-chairs.
Thank you for
Holby and
waiting.
Wisnett. I'm starting to yawn. Sorry. For the record, Deborah Boone, House District 32, the beautiful upper left coast, to which you're all invited at any time. Bringing this bill, House Bill 3387, to you with my friend, Representative Bill Kennemer, who apparently went to the hospital today, and I hope everything's okay, so he would be here. But so I wanted to just give you just a tiny bit of history, but really quickly, and this was basically in response to several correspondence I received and other people I have since heard from. What I submitted the bill, a similar bill to this bill, and we decided to co-mingle these two bills, which do the same thing, basically. But I'm using some of the messages that Bill would have brought you tonight, and one of the things he wanted to make very clear was that everybody, every one of you, has a cultural trust project in your county or in your district, because all 36 counties are represented by projects, and there are many, many of them. I found several dozen in my district alone, so I know you all have the same situation going on in yours. So some of the money goes, and I don't know all the details, that's in Christina's speech, but many of you probably walk by or drive by these projects or are entertained by them, the art projects, etc. Places like Timberline Lodge, Mount Hood Cultural Center, there's all kinds of things. The point is, though, is people give money to this trust with the expectation that that's what it will go for, and that's why they do it. It's like many other funds that we either give to or pay fees to. They expect that these funds will be used for the purpose for which they're outlined. So without too much further ado, one thing I did want to point out was that this cultural trust was a project brought to us by our beloved Ben Westland some years ago. So I'm guessing 1990s. It's been in stated for quite a while, and I think that it would be a very nice tribute to Ben to hold true to the purpose of this trust. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Co-Chairs Holvey and Wisnett. For the record, I'm Christina McNitt. I'm representing the Cultural Advocacy Coalition, and we are helping the Cultural Trust in support of this bill, and in fact worked with Representatives Boone and Kennemer in drafting legislation to bring this forward. Representing the Cultural Trust, it's become very obvious to us that a number of our donors, there is no single issue that resonates more with our donors than the sweep of funds that was experienced in the 2009 legislative session. What this bill attempts to do is statutorily state that the trust is a contractual relationship between the donors and the state for the purpose of the trust. And I just would like to remind you that Oregon is unique in the country with a cultural trust. It's a long-term goal to build a $200 million endowment for arts, heritage, and humanities in the state. The beauty of it is rather than having all of your cultural organizations compete for funds in your communities, it builds together, because first, to be a donor to the Cultural Trust, you have had to have supported your local partner with a contribution. Once you've made that contribution, then you can choose as an Oregonian to make a matching contribution to the Cultural Trust. That money, 42% of it, is granted back out every year, and the remainder is put into the endowment to build over time. We think this is an opportunity to rebuild credibility for the trust, for the donors, and to let our donors know that the trust is here for the long haul, and we are investing for a shared outcome of the $200 million endowment. Thank you.
Chair Holvey, members of the committee, for the record, Mike Salvaggio from the Office of the State Treasurer. The State Treasurer feels very strongly in support of House Bill 3387. I have supplied you with a statement of his that he has asked me to read into the record, but as I am almost certain that he's not watching, I will save us all some time and read the last three paragraphs. The trust consists of private dollars that are steered to a very specific purpose. When the state creates such a program, I feel that it establishes, whether legally binding or implicit, a promise to the donor that the purpose will be dutifully pursued. It is worthy of Oregon's history of public-private partnerships to protect that promise against impediment. It is a trust that ought not be broken. House Bill 3387 provides a fitting and prudent restriction to place in the Oregon Cultural Trust, and I urge the legislature to maintain this important source of support for arts, culture, and historical preservation in our state. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions from the committee?
discussion. Representative Matthews.
Just briefly, Mr. Chair, but the other day, I think it was mentioned in our public hearing that we really are, we can't say you can't shift or switch these funds. Is that true, and what would you respond to that? I mean, is that right? I think Representative Smith may have been the one to mention that we wanted to hear about that. But what's your response to that, and how do we do that? Because there's a number of programs that would like to have this be their dialogue, but what would you respond to that?
Is this me?
If you want.
Chair Holden, members of the committee, Representative Matthews, it's true that one legislature cannot bind the hands of a future legislature. And to the largest part of that question, I would have to refer you to legislative counsel, because I, for the record, am not fit to give the legislature legal advice. But I can say that in issues of the use of the pension fund, the use of the state accident insurance fund, these are examples of trust funds that do have these kinds of statements in statute. And although I, again, don't know legally whether that would solely protect the fund, the Oregon Supreme Court has looked towards those statements of legislative intent as one factor in determining the appropriateness of the use of those dollars.
If I may, Mr. Chair. Deborah Boone. One of the things that this will do is help rebuild the trust between the donors, the citizens of Oregon, and the legislature. And they expect, like I said, they expect these funds to be used for what purposes they gave the money to the programs they did. And in many cases, this is a big assistance to the state, because as our financial situation here has been constrained of late, and we're giving less and less money to, for example, our school districts, the cultural trust projects come back and fill in that missing link of the cultural events and programs that we can no longer provide in some areas.
Follow up, Mr. Chair, briefly.
Follow
Thank
up.
You. I just, and I'm in favor of this. I mean, trust me, I think the 911 fund gets raided. I mean, I get this. So I'm a fan. I just wonder if this is more of a gesture of, we're coming forward in good faith effort in this session to say we don't want this to happen in the future, make it more difficult for somebody to sweep this fund. But I don't necessarily know that it's going to stop what has occurred. So, but thanks for bringing it forward. And
yeah, I'm thank you, Representative Matthews. And this is a really tough bill for me as well. Based on Representative Matthews' questions, I've asked several questions about this, and especially in regards to most of the monies that go into this are a tax credit, are monies paid into this account in lieu of paying taxes, as a tax, all tax credits generally are. They're revenues, essentially. And it really, as much as I would like to go down this road, I think the trust that we would be putting in jeopardy of passing a bill that says we're not going to sweep these funds when we, you know, it almost seems like a lie to me, because we cannot bind the next legislature or the next Ways and Means process from coming in and doing that. And if that were to happen, I feel like we would have destroyed even more trust with the public in the future. And to put ourselves into that position is very difficult for me to go down that road. And I know that people have different points of view about that, but I feel very strongly by passing this kind of gesture and saying that we're going to put in statute that we're going to make a promise not to sweep these funds, and to put the state and the Ways and Means people in that position and have this happen again, I think opens the state up to lawsuits that will cost money. I think it'll open up us to much more criticism and lose a lot more trust than we've already lost at this point. And this is a very difficult subject for me to come to grips with, and I just wanted to put that on the record. So,
with respect, Chair Holvey, I hear what you're saying. I understand that. But what this does is it prevents this legislature And we are here now, and this is who we are. And of course, we can't imply that somebody else, we don't even know who might be this next legislature. Maybe some of us will be back. Maybe we'll all be gone, and it'll be a whole new group. But they'll have to answer to that then.
And thank you. I appreciate that. But this bill won't go into effect until it's signed by the governor and all that. And we will already be probably done by then. And so it really is about the next legislature. And so, I still am deeply troubled by moving forward with this. Representative Conger.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So now I'm actually a little bit confused. I want to make sure I understand the bill, and then I have a comment. So the question is, based on the exchange that I just heard, I want to clarify that the bill, if signed into law, would state that the current law from then on, in perpetuity, unless changed, is that the funds that are in the cultural trust could only be used for their advertised purposes. Is that correct, or did I misunderstand that?
Co-chairs, Representative Conger, that is correct. However, it's only a statutory construct, so absent a constitutional change, there's nothing that will prevent a future legislative body from changing that language again and then sweeping those funds. But from our perspective, it's an additional step. It's an acknowledgement that there's a purpose for those funds, and it's a relationship-building opportunity, we believe, with the cultural trust donors and with the legislative body. And I appreciate very much your point of view, Representative Holvey, and I've known that for a while, and so appreciate even more the fact that you're willing to have a hearing today and hopefully go into a work session.
So let me follow up. That comment that I had was actually consistent with what you just said, Christine. I think the implication here, I mean, I personally would assume my donations to the cultural trust are held in trust. It's already implied by the name, and I think most people's expectations would be that probably that accounts for some of the reaction people had when they found out that the money had been swept. And by putting at least an additional legislative barrier in place, we make it much harder for future legislators and legislatures, I think, to go in and sweep that money. And so, although they can, and I certainly, you know, it's a valid point, but the fact that they then have to go and actually change a law that says that you can't use the money that's held in the cultural trust instead of just going in and sweeping it and waiting to see if anyone finds out seems worthwhile to me. So I would like to vote. I'd like to work this bill and vote in favor of it.
So I appreciate that, but as happened last session, it was a budget note in a budget that changed the law, and that's all it takes. And so, there's a lot of arguments about this. I appreciate that. Any other comments, Representative Smith?
Is the cultural trust tax credit 100% tax credit or something lower than that? Does it have any cap?
Yes, the cultural trust is 100% tax credit, and there are different levels for individuals, married couples, and corporations. And actually, I saw Chris Darcy from the cultural trust just enter the room, so if you'd like to ask some questions of her, I'd be happy to give up my seat.
But I don't want to chew up everybody's time on the committee if I'm the only person with a question. But it's 100% tax credit up to some level, and then mm-hmm. and then it's capped.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I don't know if this bill is going to get moved or not, but if it isn't, I might propose that we work in the interim with a couple thoughts. If it is, I had real concerns about the sweep of the cultural trust funds in the last legislative session, and I asked a couple of influential people about it who will remain nameless. And they gave a pretty interesting response that I still had minor quarrel with, but they had an interesting response, which is, it's 100% tax credit, they don't lose anything. If they pay the taxes anyway, we'd have full control over it. It got me to thinking when I was talking to a friend of mine who lobbied me on this bill, not out of professional whatever, but just a dear friend who really cares about it. And it got me to thinking. I didn't know if we were going to move the bill or not, but that if we thought about reforming the trust, either by not calling it a trust anymore, because I do agree that it feels a little disingenuous to call it a trust if it's not one. All right. Second, alternatively, to make it a little bit lower of a tax credit, but then raise the ceiling, so you might still be able to get the same amount of money, but then it really was a trust. I think there might be options that might be worth exploring that might deal with those arguments. The only other thing I'd say is, legally, I am still a little confused and befuddled about the impact of this bill. Because on one hand, I hear us saying on the record, including testimony on the record, that we can't buy into future legislature. On the other hand, I read the bill and it says contractual obligation. And I know that the PERS example, for instance, when it says contractual obligation, the Constitution of Oregon says, you know, might say that if you violate that, you really can't. So I am, on one hand, I wonder, well, does it do anything? On the other hand, I wonder, does it have more force than we are acknowledging in that committee, and don't we want to know that before we act? And so I remain a little bit confused, but sharing very much the concerns and the objectives of the people who are bringing the bill. So that's what I'll offer about that.
Any other discussion? Representative Wisnett.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Boone and Representative Kittimer, I hope he is hearing. Thank you for bringing this bill. And I disagreed with what happened last session on sweeping funds. Christina and Michael, thank you for your testimony. There's a lot of people have a special interest in the Cultural Trust Fund. And put on the record, Michael, I appreciate yours and the Treasurer's Office outstanding and timely support of House Bill 3461.
Any other discussion? Seeing any other, I just do appreciate the bill coming forward. I appreciate the discussion. I have many friends who are very involved in the Cultural Trust, and you do know that this is not an easy bill for me. So I appreciate that. I appreciate the thought, but I am still very troubled about passing a bill that portrays a promise that cannot be kept. And that's very difficult for me. So I appreciate your testimony. Appreciate your points of view. And no other discussion.
Mr. Chair, may I bring up one final thought along those lines, if I may?
Certainly.
The state does operate certain other programs that are based on along the same lines of expecting future legislatures to take a particular course of action. And one of the things I'll mention is the Certificate of Participation Program, which we actually just recently wound down. But whatever the legislature feels about borrowing, the credit rating agencies told us through their rating increases that they trusted us to make those payments regularly on schedule, even though future legislatures were not bound to make those payments constitutionally. So in large part, the success of that program was based upon each legislature trusting the next legislature to make a proper decision with those funds, regardless of what the budget picture looked like overall. So it's not a completely alien subject to suggest that a legislature trying to hold a future legislature to a particular course of action would immediately be dismantled or fall apart, because we do engage in that sort of activity in other areas.
And I appreciate those comments. I will note, though, that some of those certificates of participation and the pensions that you mentioned also have other regulatory constructs that prevent some of those actions, as opposed to tax credit. And there's a big difference between those. And
Certainly, it's not an exact parallel.
So I appreciate the discussion, and I'll close the public hearing on House Bill 3387. And we will open a public hearing on House Bill 2631. And I was hoping that Sean could come up and walk us through a couple parts of this bill. Representative Conger had a series of questions about this bill last time it was before us that I didn't feel I was able to answer. And
So with that, Jan, could you give us a brief description of the bill?
Yes, this is a bill that allows a contracting agency to accept and consider an in-kind contribution from a bidder or proposer if the solicitation and the advertisement stated that such the contributions would be accepted and considered. But it prohibits a contracting agency from considering monetary donation or in-kind contribution in evaluating the responsiveness of a bid or a proposer. It prohibits a contracting agency from using monetary donation or in-kind contribution to offset, to reduce, modify a bid or a cost proposal. And it prohibits the contracting agency from using the monetary donation or contribution in determining which bid or proposal complies with the least cost policy. And there were no amendments before the committee.
Thank you. With Representative Conger, do you remember any of your questions? And would you like to ask any of them?
I did go to Harvard.
Killing me. I think I do, although I may miss the mark a little bit. If I recall, the question I had about this, one of the questions was just pragmatic. You know, does this reduce the ability of the contracting agencies, in this case universities, to arrange contracts in the least costly way to the university? In other words, does this interfere with their ability to, you know, potentially have a building built or have an improvement made? And I think that the second part of the question was maybe just represented some confusion on my part. I wasn't sure if the point here was to exclude bidders from being able to offer a donation that would be wrapped up in a bid. So if, and what I mean by that, I think it's easier for me to explain it with an example. If I were a furniture manufacturer and I offered to, I wanted to bid on a request for a proposal to furnish a new building, and I wanted to make a donation, but I wanted to make it of furniture that I would provide, and so I offered in my bid to donate 10% of the $1 million worth of furniture for the new building. Would that be prohibited? I guess prohibited is not the right word. Would the university be prohibited then from taking that $100,000 as being a price reduction in the bid? I think the answer is yes, but I wanted to hear it again.
Okay. For the record, Sean Brennan, Legislative Council. In response to your question, Representative Conger, Co-Chair Holvey, I should make a couple of things clear. First, one is that this bill would actually not apply to the university system because the university system is not under the public contracting code for most of its contracting activities. The rest of the contracting universe is more or less covered by this. The 279C covers construction projects, of course, so we're limiting the scope of this particular measure. To answer the first part of your question, the bill does not prohibit the contractor from offering a donation or in-kind services, but what it does require is that the contracting agency level the playing field by advertising and soliciting the possibility of accepting an in-kind donation of some sort as part of the bids. If the contracting agency does not do so, then at that point, the contracting agency is not allowed to accept the in-kind donation as part and include it in its evaluation of the responsiveness of the bid. Whether that actually has the effect of reducing those types of bids in the future, probably so, if the contracting agency does not, in fact, do the kind of advertisement that is necessary in the solicitation documents. It does not do so if the contracting agency goes through the checklist and dots all of its I's and crosses its T's and says we're going to actually allow this kind of in-kind contribution from all bidders. The basic thrust of the bill and the intent was to try and keep there from being kind of a backroom deal between one bidder and the contracting agency where they will lower the apparent cost of the bid by donating certain services and then shutting other bidders out, potentially, who do not do the same thing, not having been notified in advance this was even a possibility, and therefore losing the contract as a consequence of that. And I'm sorry, if I could have you restate the second part of your question.
No, I think you already answered it, actually.
Okay.
But may I follow up with it?
Certainly.
And I will make this brief, but could you give us, or can you think of any examples, if universities are excluded, what kinds of agencies get offers of donations?
There are very few, relatively speaking, but one that comes to mind is the Department of Veterans Affairs. They are frequently the recipient of gifts and offers of in-kind services. I can't say frequently. I mean, I don't know the actual practice of the agencies in most cases. But that would be one agency that would leap to mind that might be the recipient of a gift of this sort or a donation. Other agencies may get them from time to time. I imagine it's fairly rare. And in fact, it may be rare even among the university system as well.
Thank you very much. That was actually very helpful testimony for me. I don't know if it did any good for anybody else on the committee, but I think I understand the bill now significantly better. And I can, based on what I understand now, I can vote in favor of it.
Sean, I have another question, because you described a situation that where these in-kind contributions could impact the outcome of a bid proposal and negatively impact others. But there's another aspect that comes to my mind, and I don't know if it's possible, but it seems like it would be possible in the world of alternative bidding contracts, where a bid is actually awarded with a guaranteed price, and the contracting agency is not necessarily bound to take the lowest particular bid, but they theoretically could agree to an inflated guaranteed price with the knowledge that they're going to get a certain contribution from that contractor as well, and in fact would enable the taxpayer essentially to pay a contribution through a backdoor deal as such. Does that seem possible in the world of public contracting as you know it? I mean, is the law, is there anything that would prevent that sort of scenario from happening in law?
Co-Chair Holvey, there might be a couple of things that would prevent that from happening. One is that there is actually a least cost requirement in 279C for public contracts that are public improvements. That's not to say that an alternative contracting procedure could sort of go around that. Of course, we have our general contractor or construction manager general contracting rules that allow an entire contract to be sort of bundled as one giant contract and then parceled out later for a particular bid. I would imagine that there are some ethical considerations that would be binding on the contracting agency and the officers of the contracting agency or the folks that are doing the procurement that would prevent them from negotiating a deal like that. But in terms of trying to prevent a situation like that from occurring entirely, I don't know that the public contracting code is the vehicle to be able to do that by itself at the moment.
Thank you. And it seems like it would be pretty hard, though, to prove that anything like that happened ethically or unethically.
Co-Chair Holvey, I think that's probably true. There are numerous instances where you can have a change order or some addition to the contract that some color or some explanation would be perfectly legitimate, but that might be masking something else. But I would not want to speculate on how that might be proven or what evidence might be given for it or whether it happens even, you know, frequently or not or at all.
Thank you, and I wouldn't expect you to speculate, even though I try to get you to do it sometimes. So any other discussion on this particular bill? Seeing no other discussion, I'll close the public hearing on House Bill 3631, and I'll stand at ease for a moment.
Magoos later.
Oh, way back on the record.
Yeah,
we'll
show you a copy of this. We're back. I'm going to reconvene.
Reconvene the House Committee on General Government and Consumer Protection. And
you want to move it?
What do you want to do?
I got three.
Have you read this?
That's when it says it.
Department of Justice.
With that.
He likes your feet.
Did you know in Harvard they can
literally. Are we still in public hearing?
Oh, my. Is it called sculling?
It's called sculling.
Stand it easy.
Jason.
But it's not. It's pretty clear it doesn't.
Okay, let's be sure we got it. Let's check it. Check your list.
Cool.
So what have you been doing?
Okay. What do you think?
Like reconvening the House Committee on General Government and Consumer Protection, and I'm going to adjourn the House Committee on General Government and Consumer Protection.